Welcome to the Grace Fellowship Church of Ephrata podcast. Our desire is to help you grow in your journey with Jesus, no matter where you are. For more information, please check out our website at www.gfchurch.net.
We are going to spend time reflecting on the Christmas season, as is, you know, we do that every year. But I want to be very specific with how we are going to talk about the Christmas season in the next couple weeks with our sermons. And you'll see what I mean in a moment when I talk a little bit more about that. Is there any World Cup fans in here? Any soccer fans? Okay, let's do it this way. Is there any soccer fans here? Okay, and the rest of you are just wrong. Yes, the World Cup is a big deal, and this past week it made all the news because they did the draw. It's going to be in America, Mexico, and Canada this year. I grew up in a soccer home. My parents were missionaries to Brazil, so we cheer for Brazil. Sorry if that makes me a traitor to our country. I'm sorry. I am. When America decides to appreciate soccer, I will cheer for their team. They don't yet, so we're getting there. The World Cup just had their draw this past week, and it was kind of cool to see, like, what countries going where. Brazil is coming to Philadelphia. I would love to see them, but at $1,000 for the starting ticket price, probably going to have a hard time cutting that. Maybe I'll go to the tailgate. I don't know, but World Cup is always just a big deal in the rest of the world compared to America. Americans just don't seem to get as excited about it. You know, whatever. That's fine. But over the last two World Cups, there has been a team that has made the news. And it's not necessarily the team so much. They made the news, but their fan base. Over the last two World Cups, Japan made the news for a very unusual behavior of their fan base. After games were done, including the games when their team was eliminated from the World Cup, which, again, in the U.S., you're like, whatever, we lost. To other countries, when you're eliminated from the World Cup, it is devastating. It's national pride. National pride. When Japan lost, they did something very unusual. We have a picture of it. They cleaned the stands. They literally got trash bags and began to clean, not just from where they were, but from where everyone else had sat, including the opposing team. They just took it upon themselves to be good guests. Now, I know none of you here have gone to the movies or to a ball game and have left that nacho tray underneath the seats, you know, because they have paid staff. Therefore, I can just leave junk here. The movie theater, whatever it is, I know none of you would do that because you're wonderful people. But, it seems unusual that the Japan fan base would do this. Why on earth would they choose to be polite, clean up after themselves, clean up after people that were just cheering for the team that beat their team? On top of it, their soccer team also made the news in the last World Cup because they cleaned their entire locker room after they had been eliminated. Completely. And they left. You may not be able to see it, but right there is a little card on the table there. It was a thank you note for the fact that they even had the honor to play in the World Cup. Man, do we have a long ways to go as a country. This made the news. Again, even for people that weren't even soccer fans, they were like, wow, that is crazy. Again, they had every reason. They were guests to the stadium. Whenever you go to a game or to a movie, you're kind of like the guest to the location that you're going to. And they were guests, and yet they felt compelled to clean up after themselves. Let's imagine you're going to have a Christmas party, we'll say next weekend. You're going to invite over a lot of people. So you have them out, you have some food, music, great time, decorations, all that. And you have them over, but there's one person who shows up, and you're not quite sure who they are, and you're kind of embarrassed to ask because you're also taking care of all your other guests. But here's the weird thing about that person that you don't know. They begin to help serve food. They begin to go into the bathroom after somebody is done in the bathroom and make sure it smells nice, it's clean, all of that. And they come back out and they wait for the next person to go in, and then they go in and clean it and all that. They do the dishes. Is that weird to anyone? Yes. Okay, that's when you call 911. It's weird to think that a guest, especially one you don't really know, shows up and does things that you would have had to do yourself, but they took it upon themselves to meet a need that you had. You could say that they were being a servant. You know, Christmas, we talk about God being born in human flesh, named Jesus. And we've grown up with this story. You know, we have our manger over here, and you grow up with the story, and you hear it so much that sometimes we don't really get our mind around it because it's this cute little thing that you see, you know, the Charlie Brown Christmas where Linus tells the whole story and all of that. We sing songs about God coming in human flesh. Even people that aren't churched will sing those songs. They like them. You know, they'll sing Joy to the World and all these songs. We have decorations. Maybe you have decorations like me out on your front lawn of the nativity scene. It's kind of seen as one of those things you do. Again, it represents God coming in human flesh. Or maybe you mention it, even unchurched people. If you say, what is the real reason for the holiday Christmas? I think even unchurched people would say, well, it recognizes the birth of Jesus Christ, even if they don't believe in him. So if we're going to say that that's what this holiday season is about, we need to get our mind around what that really means for us today. Why did this baby named Jesus show up, and why on earth should you even care? Why should you care? What does it have to do with you at the workplace? What does that have to do with you and taking care of your lawn? I mean, what does it really have to do with that? Over the next few weeks, we are going to look at a couple statements that grown-up Jesus, adult Jesus made, where he explains why he even came. He's going to explain why he even came. He says it for himself. And so we want to take a look. If we want to understand why it's a big deal about this, then we need to understand why he said he even came. He came from the beginning. He came from the beginning with a purpose. So we're going to take a look this morning at Mark chapter 10, verses 41 to 45. You can turn there in your Bible or on your app, or you can zap the QR code in your bulletin as well, and that will take you there. Mark 10, 41 to 45. Let me set this passage up. Jesus and his disciples, Jesus has been in his ministry for a couple years, and his disciples frequently have arguments over who is going to be the greatest of them. Who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom? And so this is some of the dialogue that keeps happening with them, and one specific thing happens in this moment. At the beginning of, or the middle of chapter 10, two of the disciples named James and John, brothers, they're called the Sons of Thunder. That's their nickname. Probably tells you they were like the UFC fighters or mixed martial arts fighters of the disciples. I'm kidding, because John was known as the disciple of love. But it was known that their personality was very much in your face. They just said things, and they probably didn't think a lot about it. They had grace and mercy is not in their vocabulary. They told you like it was, sometimes much to their chagrin. Before the passage we're about to read happens, James and John's mom comes to Jesus and says, hey, when you set up your kingdom, Jesus, I want to make sure that my boys are at your right hand and your left hand. She goes to bat for them. Now, it's very possible that James and John put her up to this because they wanted to be known as the most important. When Jesus sets up his kingdom, we get all the good stuff. And Jesus says, that's not for me to give. That's for my Father to give. And now we're going to pick up at verse 41. And it says this, and when the ten heard it, they began to be indignant at James and John. Now, you answer me this. Were they right to be indignant with the request they had just given Jesus about being at the right and left hand? Yeah. I mean, I think some of us would. I know some of you have that coworker that always looks their best in front of the boss, and you know they're not. But they're trying to make sure that they get, you know, promotions and raises, and they always are on their best behavior when the boss is around. You get irritated with them. Or, as the disciples, you become indignant. They were annoyed that James and John had asked for the corner office in Jesus' kingdom in the future before they even thought about doing the same themselves. See, I'm convinced that they were irritated because they're like, they did it. Man, that was brilliant. Why didn't I do that? I should have asked Jesus that myself. And so they're irritated with James and John having the audacity to ask for a place of honor and privilege and so on. And it goes on in verse 42, and it says this, "And Jesus called them to him," brings all the disciples to himself, "and says to them, you know that those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. But it shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be slave of all." Verse 45, "For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." What was reason number one that we celebrate Jesus coming being born? It's this: Jesus came to be a servant to free us. He was born to be a servant to us, to free us. And we're going to talk a little bit about what that means. Jesus states it right there. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many people. Jesus in this passage does something interesting. After James and John do their brash, bold ask, and the other disciples get irritated, he says, "Guys, come on, bring it in. We got to talk." And he says, first off, he talks about the fact, he says, "You know, those that are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over the people that they lead, and their great ones exercise authority over them." Jesus first says, here's how those that are not followers of God, this is how they live their life. They believe that power and position equals importance. Power and position equals importance. You want to get someplace, you want to be important? Well, you got to get the right job, or you got to have enough power. That may be through money, that may be through influence, you have enough TikTok followers, whatever it is, you're looking for ways to be powerful. You can make a difference just in the way that you act and the things that you say. Jesus says, you know what? Those that are considered rulers, the leaders of this not following God world or the unchristian world, non-Christian world, lord it over them. And their great ones exercise authority over them. Now, give a little bit of a history lesson here. What empire is in charge at this point of Jesus' ministry? Romans, okay. And if you know anything, even if you haven't been raised in church, you know that Rome was it was the greatest empire possibly that we've seen in world history. They were unstoppable for hundreds of years. This Roman world put the importance in their society on being wealthy, from the right family, or having the right occupation. If you had the right family, you had the money, you had all of that stuff going for you, you were going to be given a very special point of privilege. And that privilege led to many things. Now, here's the kicker for this. Those that were in those important positions because they had money, family, occupation, oftentimes would go and they would use their money to pay projects for the city. If the city's like, we need to build a new bridge or a new school for the kids, the wealthy and the important would give their money to it, but it was with a caveat. If I give my money to build that new school, I better get some power in this government, some privilege in this government. When I don't do my taxes right, you're just going to turn a blind eye to that, right? Now, is that corrupt? Yes, that's corrupt. Yet, they used their power, their family, their position, whatever it is, they used it all to gain importance. And Jesus says, this is how this world works. This is how the Gentile world works, is it's all about being powerful, rich, and from the right family. You know, there was a time, and I know this is hard to believe, there was a time that those in our American government referred to themselves as public servants, and they actually fulfilled that. That's not a political commentary, that's honest. Where they literally went there not for their own ambitions, not for their own power in their own pocket and what they could put in it, but to take care of the people that they represented. That's what it used to be like. They were public servants, and now we've seen a drift from that. And it was the same in Rome. You had people that served their own desires and such. Now, Jesus points this out to them in verse 42 because this had seeped into the Jewish world. This had seeped into Herod's rulership at this time period, you had seen this corruption happen. So Jesus points out, you know what? In the human view, power and position equals importance. And then he goes on to point this out. He says that the results of this human view are this: oppression and manipulation. He basically says this: those leaders that are out there that are wealthy and have all the money and all that stuff, they use it for oppressing people. They remind them frequently, do you know who I am? Do you know who I am? Do you know how much money I have? Who are you? They would use that position to keep people in their place. They would oppress them. They would manipulate them. They would manipulate the government. They would remind the people of their importance by doing what the young kids call these days flexing. They flexed. And they would remind. So here's how this works. A Roman soldier could let you know how important they were. If you are a normal citizen, a Roman soldier could come up to you and say, you know what, I don't feel like carrying my armor. Carry my armor for me. And you didn't have a choice. And it could just be that they were lazy or they had to text some people on their phone or whatever. They make you carry their armor. You can't get out of it. They loved to flex on people and show them how important they were. And this is what Jesus is pointing out. This is how things work. This human view leads to oppression and manipulation. Now, history is filled with leaders like this. It's not just in the Roman world. It's not just in our you know, modern times, where there's leaders and important people who like to remind you just how rich, wealthy, and powerful they are. You look throughout human history. Recently, I've been doing a little bit more reading on the French Revolution. You have Marie Antoinette and her husband, Louis XVI, who, you know, let them eat cake. And they always made sure at that time period to remind people how wealthy they were and important they were. And it's what led to the French Revolution. You had George III, who kind of thought that those people over in the colonies really, they just need to stop bellyaching and whining over there. Yeah, and the next thing you know, our nation is born. You have people such as Pol Pot, who didn't care about his people, millions murdered in the killing fields. You had Lenin, who used his army to keep people in line. You have even Maduro and some of what is going on there, where he's not even caring about the plight of his own country in Venezuela, or Castro even. They all are so separate from the people they're supposed to be serving. They just use their money, they use their power to put people in their place. And that place is not your place. Jesus points us out that this is how things work in the world apart from God. Leaders abuse people. They take advantage of people, and they frequently remind you of it. I would like to say that this stays in the non-Christian world, but no, there are stories of pastors being removed for bullying their staff, bullying their congregations. It happens. There's something about power and position that some people think this makes me more important than everybody else. And that's Jesus' point. James and John just tried to pull this, guys. But guess what? That's not how it works. And he went on in verse 43, and then he gives God's view of how you lead and how you live your life. And it's service and selflessness. Service and selflessness. And he said this in verse 43. It's not supposed to be that way among you, disciples, but whoever would be great among you must be your servant. And whoever would be the first among you must be slave of all. That's how this works. How does God's view work? It's that we are to live a life of service and selflessness. You want to be important? Then stop just thinking about your own desires, your own wills, your own preferences. No, you serve other people. Greatness comes through serving. Now, this is a very controversial statement. And here's why. Almighty God, creator of black holes, creator of hurricanes, creator of the universe that we haven't found the end of because it just keeps going, that God, that powerful God, when he comes to earth, says, you know what? Instead of me going down and doing like the world and flexing and saying, do you know who I am? I'm going to allow Jesus to put on human flesh. And that is how I will enter the world. I'm not going to make a big deal about how important and powerful I could be. I'm going to be a servant. Jesus will be a servant. He will be selfless. He will look out for others. Think about that. What if that was you? You are an important person, wealthy, you have a high position at your job, or maybe it's in the government or whatever, and you have to go work among your people. Is it easy for you to fall in that mindset of, well, I don't have to do that? Because do you know who I am? I mentioned a pastor out in California, John MacArthur, a lot, because John MacArthur, one of the stories that always impacted me about him was this, that he oversaw a seminary out in California, and frequently that seminary, they would get done their chapel services and they had thousands of chairs to tear down. And this president of this university, this well-known radio pastor, would be amongst the students taking the chairs down. He didn't have to do that, but he did it because it's service and selflessness. This is the mindset of Jesus. He had to make up his mind how he was going to enter the world. And so, as John Stott, the author, said in one of his books, he said this: Jesus had to decide between a couple things before he entered into the world as a baby. He needed to decide between if he would live for selfish ambition or sacrifice. Would he live for his own power and flexing his power or serving people? Would he live for his own comfort or his own suffering? These three things Jesus had to decide before he comes into the world. Which would it be? He's the God of the universe. He could have chose selfish ambition and let people know how important he is. He could have been powerful and reminded people how powerful he was. He could have just chosen to live in comfort rather than the world that he lived in. And these three things Jesus decided before coming into the earth in the form of a baby. He chose a birth instead of an entrance. Think of this. Jesus could have just shown up one day as an adult. Isn't that true? Yeah, he could have. But he chose to come and live and be born like a human. He had a poor upbringing instead of a palace. He had some say in that. He had poor parents. He decided to spend his adult years associating with the sick and the sinners and the outcasts of society rather than the pious and the powerful. He chose to have a career set up of teaching instead of ruling over people to remind how important he was. He chose to have an unjust trial. He chose an unjust trial instead of being pardoned because, guys, you're trying to accuse me of this. Do you know who you're trying to find wrong and crucify? Yeah, that's right. I'm God. He didn't do that. And he chose a criminal's death instead of honor. This is what Jesus did. This is God's view of how to be important, to serve and to be selfless. And the results of God's influence is this, is influence and met needs. Influence. You are more inclined to listen to a person who you can tell has been humbled and serves you. Listen, if you have a boss, if you work in a big corporation, imagine having your boss, or better yet, the CEO, if you work with a larger company, the CEO of that company coming and just serving food and looking out for you. Are you going to be more inclined to possibly listen to this individual, this guy, this girl, whoever it is? Are you more inclined to listen to that person because they're serving you? Yes, you are. Because they're humbling themselves. They're serving you. They don't have to do that. One of the results of being a person of service and selflessness is that you gain influence. And it's not that you're using that to manipulate. Let me be clear with this. Kids, if I can have your attention for the 3 seconds and I'm about to talk to you. Don't think that this means that to be like Jesus means cleaning your room so you'll get to go to your best friend's house for the weekend. That's manipulation. That is not what Jesus is talking about. Jesus is talking about serving others and being selfless. Not for what's in it for me. When I think about the influence, when I think about the met needs, the one thought that came back, because it's already been on TV once and it's going to be on TV 1,500 more times in the next 3 weeks, is my favorite Christmas movie, one of them, excuse me, It's a Wonderful Life, and the character George Bailey. And if you don't know the story by now, I'm going to blow the whole plot for you because this is pathetic, people, okay? It's been a while. George Bailey, throughout the thing that just as you become an adult, you see that movie differently than when I was a kid. And you see this guy who had all money going his way, had opportunity going his way, and he chose to constantly give it away so other people could succeed and have their dreams met. And so act after act after act of selflessness, serving, he's doing this God's view of influence and importance. He's giving it all away to other people rather than looking at it himself. Well, I've earned this for myself. He gives it away. In the one moment that my eyes get a little misty in this, because they do mist, there is tear ducts there, is at the very end when his brother raises the toast in front of the whole town and says, to my big brother George, the richest man in town. And why is George rich? Yes, he has friends, but he looked out for others over himself. See, that's God's view. This is a secular, you know, non-Christian. This just confirms what Jesus is saying here. If you want to be great, you serve others and put them over your own desires, your own, what you want for you, what's in it for me. And that's why reason number one, we remind ourselves this, Jesus came to be a servant to free us. In verse 45, he said, for even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to what? Serve, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus came to serve. That sounds weird to us. When we see a young baby, we think about what might the possibility and potential be for their life. Jesus had one direction from birth, and that was to serve us for a mess that we were in because of our sin. Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 through 8, I love how Paul puts this, because he encapsulates what Jesus was teaching about here. He says, have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus. This is the mentality we all need. Though he was in the form of God, he had all the rights, all the privilege, all the power of being God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but instead emptied himself by taking on the form of a what? Servant. Being born in the likeness of men, Almighty God in human flesh. And being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross, an embarrassing way of dying. An embarrassing criminal's death, he humbled himself to. He came to serve and to be selfless. We, if we want to be important in God's kingdom, need to serve and to be selfless. Not because we can manipulate people or influence people. No. Because he set the example for us. My point this morning is this. I have to break this one down. It's a long one. Jesus is a servant you didn't know you needed. For the problem you didn't know you had. To pay the price you couldn't pay. Why don't we celebrate God coming in human flesh in the form of a baby? Because he came as a servant. He came humbly, lived for others, not himself. Didn't flex. To meet the problem you didn't know you had. We just spent a whole month talking about sin and what that means and what that is in your life. And the breakdown, it is rebellion against God. We break peace with God's perfect command and what he calls us to. And this is the problem many people still don't even think they have. I'm okay. I'm a good person. I do a lot of good things. We have a problem. And here's the thing. He did this to pay a price you couldn't pay. No matter how good a person you are, no matter how much charity you do, no matter how much end of the year giving you give to all the 1,500 pieces of mail that you're receiving from all the places asking for their end of the year giving for tax purposes, regardless of that, you will never get to heaven apart from him. Jesus is the servant you didn't know you needed for the problem you didn't even know you had to pay the price you couldn't pay. And that is why we celebrate Christmas. The answer to the problem had come. I don't know where you are in your relationship with Jesus Christ. I don't know if you've ever made a commitment to him, to follow him, to love him anything like that. But I want to say this. The starting point to having a relationship with Jesus isn't sitting around and thinking, wow, he's a pretty cool dude. You know, he was a good teacher. Yeah, I like that. He said some really cool, very Zen type things that, you know, sounds like one of these gurus from the Far East and all this. And it just makes me feel good. That's sometimes as far as people go with who Jesus was. That's not the starting point to a relationship with Jesus. The starting point is realizing we're broken and we have a problem. And there is only one solution. That is it. That is where the relationship with Jesus begins. Because otherwise, he's just another cool, witty, self-help, motivational speaker that makes us feel good or contemplative. We need to see our brokenness. We have this problem that needs to be fixed. 2 years ago, Beth and I went for our anniversary. We had the opportunity to go down to Cozumel, Mexico. I'd never been to Mexico in my life, so that was kind of fun. And it was my first time, I think hers as well, of ever staying at a resort. And resorts freak me out because they do everything for you. As a parent, I don't know what that means. Okay? They come and they clean up after you. They make your bed. They you're sitting there just enjoying, you know, the 800 degrees that you're in, which I don't enjoy, but whatever. I was there and you got people coming up to you asking you if you want a drink or food or whatever, and they'll just go off, get it, and bring it back to you. I mean, it was crazy. It was freaky for me. These people were looking out for needs that I had that I must not have realized I actually had. But here's the difference between what they were doing there and what Jesus did. They do it because it's their job. They do it for tips. He doesn't. You know what he wants? He wants you. He wants a relationship and a friendship with you, a committed relationship with you. That was the whole point of him coming to earth. Make things right with God. We had a broken relationship with him. And we can either accept his gift of salvation and a relationship and commit our lives to living for him, or we can turn it aside. And for those of you that who have already made that decision to follow Jesus, you may say, well, Dan, I've already done that. Great. Then let's start following his example of selflessness and service. If you're a Christian, that's on you. Selflessness, service. That is how you are great in God's kingdom. I know a lot of Christians that don't strive for greatness in God's kingdom because they don't lift a finger. And I say that because I've had my own periods of time where that has been my walk with Christ. I don't lift a finger. It's time for me to just come and be served, not to serve. And that's a problem. That goes totally the opposite of what we're called to. I have two takeaways for us. This is the practical part for us. This is my challenge for you to put it into action this week. Let me say this first off. If you've never committed your life to Jesus, I hope in this season when we represent the solution to the world's greatest problem, yes, there's sickness, yes, there's hunger, yes, there's disease, yes, there's totalitarianism and all that stuff in the world. The greatest problem is the sin problem. And there's only one solution, and it's Jesus. And yes, that's your life too. The greatest problem isn't that you need more self-help, it's you need him. You need him. I hope you will consider, at the very least, investigating the claims of Jesus and what he said about himself. Read the Bible. Read the book of John. Read the book of Mark. That's a nice short and to the point one. Whatever it is, investigate what he said about himself and see if it's true. Because I have full confidence he will show you what's true as you read his word. I hope you will commit your life to Jesus this Christmas season. No greater gift in your life than that. But for those of us that are Christians, and as well as those of us that have not made that decision yet, two challenges I have for you. The first one is this, is use your power to empower others' success. Use your power to empower others' success. How do I live like Jesus? How do I do this selflessness and service that he talks about to be great in his kingdom? Well, use the power that you have been given to empower other people's success. You all have a level of power. You may feel completely powerless. You have influence. Whether it's in your home, whether it's at your job, you have influence on the people around you. Use that to invest in other people, to use it for their success, not your own, not your promotion. Look out for others first. There is a Christian author named Frank Peretti. And some of you know him. He had a bestseller back in the 1990s I read in high school called This Present Darkness, really cool novel. Frank Peretti grew up and had a pretty rough life. If you look into his story, he was bullied for many years. He had a deformation of his tongue, where his tongue literally stuck out of his mouth a bit. And it was this thing he had to get several surgeries and so on. And as a result, you can imagine being a kid and going to school with this deformation. He was made fun of. He was teased. He was picked on. People would take his stuff. He became obsessed with monsters stories, you know, Frankenstein and Dracula and all these things. Why? Because that's what he felt like. And he got to one of the roughest places on earth, middle school. The bullying continued. But something changed. See, there was a big, strong kid in his class. And you would think that this big, strong kid would just do like everybody else and make fun of Frank, harass him, you know, take his stuff, break his stuff. This kid took it on himself as his ministry and his calling to defend him. And nobody was going to mess with this kid because he was the biggest kid in class. See, he had the opportunity to do what everybody else did, make fun of Frank, all of that. Instead, he used his strength and his power to protect who everyone else said he should have been preying upon. You have the ability in your life to do the exact same thing. This is what Jesus did. He used his power so that we could have salvation. How can you use your power to help other people succeed? And then secondly, this. Use your position to bless those around you. If God has given you a position, maybe it's only in your own home. How can you use that position that God has given you to bless those around you, to be selfless, to serve others with the position that you have? How could you, maybe this is a different way of putting it, how can you do unsolicited blessings on individuals? And I know that this may sound very, you know, Miracle on 34th Street, Christmas type stuff, you know, let's just be giving people. No, let's be giving people. How can you bless people that we often overlook? How can you meet a need of a person that gets overlooked or taken for granted? You remember at the very beginning I talked about the Japan fans? Well, they saw people that are overlooked, the staff that works there and has to do all the cleanup. And they went ahead and they used their abilities to do that for them. They were selfless. They served. How can you use your position to bless those around you? If you are in a ministry here at church, how can you bless, especially if you oversee a ministry, how can you bless the people that are serving under you? What can you do for them? I don't care if it's just taking them to Javadi's or Starbucks or a tea place for the tea lovers or whatever. Or if they like water, take them to a stream. I don't care. But how can you bless them with what you have? If you have employees, how can you unsolicited bless them? Shock them. Surprise them. How can you do it to your church family, members in it? How can you celebrate others rather than yourself and use your position specifically to do it? You may say, well, I don't really have a lot of those. Well, good. I know what you do have, probably. I have to put in a shameless plug because I have brother-in-laws that are in this field, as well as every Tuesday there's a truck that comes by. My kids used to be really excited about it. They aren't anymore. They're not impressed with the garbage truck. There are delivery guys. Some of you people have an Amazon problem, and I'm half of them. You have delivery people. Yes, they're getting paid. You have mail people. You got trash people. You got people that just get overlooked. You got people that are ringing you out at Dutch Way, okay? People that aren't supposed to be blessed, you find a way to bless them. Shock them. Surprise them. Serve them. We all have them. And I don't know what that looks like for you, and I'm not going to say, here's the 10 ways we're going to do it. You do it the way that God directs you to. But rather than not think about it at all, how do we do that? That we serve and we be selfless. Because each time we do it is an imitation of Jesus' work for us. And you don't know the doors that that may open to conversation. Let me tell you about who served me and what he's done for my life. Let's have a word of prayer. Father, as we think about your reason for coming being selfless, to be a servant of all, Lord, forgive us for the times, myself included, where we put ourselves above others, where we use our position, we use our power to somehow flex on people and remind them how insignificant they are and how important we are. Help us to seek to be the servants of all, to be selfless, to look out for others. Even before we leave here, lay someone on our heart that we can serve this week, that we can bless, that we can use our position, our influence to help them get ahead, that they can fulfill their ambitions. This is what you did for us. We thank you for the gift of salvation. We thank you for you coming into the form of a human as a baby to grow up in a broken world in a poor family from a town nobody wanted to be from. And you lived to give your life for us to pay the punishment and the price for our sin, to make this to be the ransom for many, to set us free. God, if there's anyone here that has never made that decision, I ask that you would help them, even in this moment, to be brave, that they would quietly in their hearts say, God, I know I have rebelled and disobeyed against you, and I ask you to forgive me of that. And I want to commit the rest of my life to following you and being like you. I believe Jesus died on the cross for my sins. And I commit the rest of my life to living for him. God, that you would put that in the hearts of individuals today. And that you begin to show them to radically change their life. We ask this all in your name. Amen.
Well, that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. If you would like prayer, you can send your prayer request into prayer@gfchurch.net and we will pray for you. If you like this message, don't forget to subscribe on the podcast app, Google, or Spotify. Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram. We look forward to seeing you next week.